you've heard it over and over. A progressive tax code plus free college equals equity in education. You've seen examples of different countries that use this recipe and have probably come across plenty of campaigns that demand this. However, is this really enough? Do all we need is free college to make everyone educated? Does progressive tax alone solve the education crisis? These are some of the questions that often kept Professor George Bulman wondering, who, by the way, is our guest for this episode.
Thank you for having me. So I'm an associate professor of economics at the University of California at Santa Cruz, and I am in the economics department. I study issues relating to access to college, among other things. A lot of my research has looked at the role of money, household resources, and information for whether or not students decide to attend college or not.
Bulk of professors' research has tried answering such questions, and according to some of the studies he's conducted, the results might be surprising to many in our audience. Okay, first things first, what exactly is a progressive tax system?
Well, a progressive tax system, as sort of generically defined, has to do with whether or not people who have higher income pay a higher share of their income as taxes. So if you look at the marginal tax rate in the United States, it's increasing in income, so that's a progressive tax system.
Okay, so that's the progressive tax system stuff. But Professor Bulman says there is a second part to it when you think of redistributive government.
So you can have a progressive tax system where higher income people are paying a higher share of their income in taxes, but they're also the ones receiving the benefits from the government. So for example, in a simple case where you have a public university, let's say Berkeley or Michigan, but it primarily serves the children of very high earning households, then you don't necessarily have a redistributive system in place because higher earners are paying more of the taxes, but they're also reaping more of the benefits.
In other words, progressive tax system would be one where upper income households pay a larger share of their income to taxes, and the tax revenue is then used to benefit lower income households.
So an example of a redistributive tax program that's a federal program that's intended to benefit lower income households, for example, would be, so we collect taxes using, you know, the income tax, for example, which is progressive, and those who earn more pay more taxes. And then in turn, we distribute federal Pell Grant aid to students, and you're not eligible to get a Pell Grant if your household has too high of an income. So the program is designed to provide grants to lower income households, so children from lower income households who are planning to attend college. So when students are applying to college, they fill out a federal aid form, and that determines their eligibility for various federal grant and loan programs, and also it's used by institutions to determine whether or not they'll get institutional aid to reduce the cost of college. And so Pell Grant is sort of the largest of the grant programs administered by the federal government that provides money for undergraduate education in the United States.
Largest of the grant programs. Pell Grants, however, aren't the only tool that make college accessible.
There are other things that the federal government does to reduce the cost of college that, at least on the surface, would appear to be sort of progressive and redistributive in nature. So one of those are the tax credits and deductions that households can take when they pay tuition for college. So the idea is that you have a child who attends college, you pay tuition and fees for them to attend college, and then you can get a reduction in your tax bill as a result of that through either a credit or a deduction. And the idea is that there are limits. So very high income households can't take those credits or deductions. And so at least in theory, the benefit should go more towards lower and middle income households.
At least in theory. Professor Bullman, however, further explains the actual stuff that goes on with tax credits. In comparison to Pell Grants, tax credits have higher cutoffs, meaning people with relatively higher income can also avail tax credit programs.
You know, in the case of these credits and deductions, the cutoffs are pretty high. So for married households, so households with two parents, you're looking at a cutoff in the neighborhood of $160,000. So it's not a low cutoff in terms of income. And that's one of the things we studied in our analysis of tax credits and deductions was who actually ends up benefiting from these programs.
Quite surprisingly to many, it wasn't the lower income households that were reaping benefits from tax credit and deduction programs meant to be progressive.
Getting back to the idea of how progressive these tax credits and benefits are, there was a big expansion in the generosity of the program in 2009. So this did a couple of things. So the first thing that happened is that they made part of the tax credit a refundable. So that means even if you owe the federal government $0 in taxes, you could get up to $1,000 back as a refund. So that on average is going to be good for lower income households, right? So even though they would have owed zero in taxes, they're now getting a check for $1,000. And so that's generally not going to benefit higher income households that owe taxes. It's going to benefit the lower income households, the refundability. However, they also dramatically increased the income cutoffs for, you know, that determine which households are eligible for the tax credit. So the income cutoffs that determine whether or not you're eligible moved up, and that sort of included, roped in a lot more households that are now eligible for the tax credits and deductions. And that is going to benefit higher income households. So when you move the income cutoff from say $120,000 to $160,000 or $180,000, then you're including a lot of sort of middle and upper middle income households that are now eligible for the benefit. And one of the key things to note here is that higher income, the children of higher income households are just more likely to go to college. So when you include a household as being eligible that earns $150,000 a year, that household is much more likely to have a child that goes to college than a household that makes $15,000 or $20,000 a year. So you're going to end up with a much higher fraction of eligible households that are high income actually using the credit and deduction than lower income households, simply because they're much more likely to have children going to college. And so that works against a progressive tax system. So the benefit is accruing more to the highest part of the distribution of who's eligible.
And this is where it gets interesting. Why are children from higher income households more likely to go to college than children from lower income households when the same tax credits are provided to both types of families? It turns out that access to information on the benefits of getting a college education is more readily available to children from higher income families because, on average, it is very likely that their parents went to college too. Also, a lack of information on benefits of going to college leaves people from lower income households with multiple choices on how to spend the earned tax credit.
One of the big takeaways, I think, is that in general, programs that directly affect the price of college tend to be more effective than programs that increase household income. So if we're considering two policies, one which is simply redistributive in nature in the sense that the household will now have a lower tax bill or will have higher income, and another program in which we're providing a grant or scholarship directly for college to the child, then the latter is going to have a larger effect on college going. It's just more targeted when you provide sort of general resources to the household. You're competing with all kinds of other things that they want to spend money on, whether that's a house or a car or quitting their job or whatever it may be. It's not that household income can't have an impact on educational attainment for children, just that it's not nearly as targeted as a program that actually affects tuition and loans and the price of college. And so in general, you're going to get bigger effects when it's more targeted like that.
But what about the lack of access to information thing? How do we deal with that?
So what I think another sort of aspect of the literature that's sort of coming through is that combining a financial intervention with an information, a counseling intervention has the sort of largest net effect. So I think it helps to step back and to think about what are the characteristics of a high school student who is very likely to go to college. And I think if you look at that, and this is true across countries, the characteristic is that their parents went to college. And parents play a crucial role. So they provide information about college, the benefits of college, how to apply for college, when you need to apply for college, whether or not they're going to be able to afford college. So there's just a whole lot of sort of hands-on guidance that people get directly from parents, relatives, siblings, obviously parents being the most obvious one. And so if you take a student who doesn't have that, who does not have somebody providing that kind of guidance, simply having a scholarship program available might not be enough because there are multiple steps. You have to know that you have to apply for to take the SAT, to apply for college, to enroll in, you know, to apply for housing when it's time for that to happen. So there's all these steps in the process and they all pose obstacles for a student when they're transitioning from high school to college. And so simply having a more generous federal grant program isn't useful if the student doesn't know that they're supposed to fill out the federal grant aid application in the first place. And so what I think a lot of research is finding is that combining both financial components, scholarships, grants, loans, with intensive counseling, not just one time I'm sending you a text message or you're meeting with your guidance counselor once for 20 minutes during your senior year, but actual intensive interventions where they're meeting with students and telling them about their college options, telling them about how to apply for federal aid. When you combine those things together, that's when you really see large effects. Obviously, this is not restricted to progressive tax systems and whether or not we're funding college education fully through tax dollars. If you really want to look at where are the barriers for going to college and having equity in that outcome, you need to consider the whole process from early childhood education to middle school to high school to the process for actually being able to attend colleges or universities. And if you ignore any one step in that process, then you're potentially not going to get the effect that you think you are. So the fact that college is free at the end doesn't matter much if students have already been put into a track that doesn't allow them to attend. So you want to take into account the whole process from start to finish if you actually want to improve educational equity.